Hey, this is Double J, Jeff Jarrett, WWE Hall of Famer, and you're listening to the My 1-2-3 Cents Podcast.
It's my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo! Kevin! You're stupid.
Hey friends, welcome to episode 560 of the My 1-2-3 Cents podcast. I am Kevin Huntsberger, joined once again this week by Chad Smart. Chad, welcome. You're going to be my ears this week because apparently last week when I was solo, my audio went out about halfway through the show. So if I apologize for that for those who listened or tried to listen to last week's episode, and Chad will let me know if my audio goes awry this week and we'll make the proper adjustments. But how are things going?
Yeah, I like the fact that you think I'm listening to you while we do this.
I should have expected that.
Yeah. No, good. Things are good. Although I was going to tell you, you know, before we started recording that depending on how this episode goes, I think you could have just play a, for the YouTube viewers, just play the image from The Simpsons that says old man yells at clouds, because that's how I feel after the last week of wrestling.
Well, you know. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say specifically WWE. So,
well, of course. I mean, you know, Tony Khan and his cast of characters can do no wrong. And
all right, and that check finally cleared. So,
what'd you say?
The check finally cleared. So,
all right. Well, we are going to talk about Hulk Hogan and SummerSlam as the main topic today. But obviously, lots of things going on in the news. I know you watched SummerSlam on a delay. That was part of the reason why you weren't on last week's episode. I did some quick little recaps on YouTube sharing my thoughts, but and I don't want to go into a SummerSlam deep dive from 2025, but obviously the two big things, the cash in of Seth Rollins on CM Punk and Brock Lesnar's return. I know, let me cue the clouds here and go ahead and start your little rants.
First night one was spoiled to me, like I said, by an email because I didn't get to watch it live. Sunday morning, I wake up and I was out of town last week at a place with spotty internet. So, it was part of the reason why I didn't watch it, until I was able to, but I was checking my email and I get an email from WWE, which I should have expected, and said, Seth Rollins cashes in money. And I'm like, thanks WWE. You just...
And I know you and I have little... I argue with you. It is not a spoiler if it's already happened. Now, if they had sent that out on Friday, it would have been a spoiler.
It is a spoiler. If
Citizen Kane is... you didn't watch doesn't make it a spoiler, though.
It makes it a spoiler for me.
But you said WWE spoiled it. WWE didn't spoil it.
Spoiled it for me.
Okay. You spoiled it yourself.
Let me rephrase. WWE spoiled the result for me. So, yes, I understand what you're saying. What I'm saying is I didn't know it. WWE told me what happened. Therefore, I blame Triple H.
Well, his check cleared for me. That's why I'm defending.
So when I finally did get to watch that, I mean, I kind of expected it. I mean, that was the, you know, the speculation was Seth wasn't injured. It was all a ploy. Mm-hmm. I had no problem with the cash-in. I hated the way the cash-in happened. Because I would have rather, you know, he comes limping out there on his crutches. I would have rather seen the Bronze. I'm trying to think of a cool nickname for Bronson and Braun. The two Bronze, the LeBrons. There we go. I'm going to call them LeBrons. Come in and attack Punk. And then Seth comes down with the crutches and throws the crutches down to get into the ring. Instead of throwing them down at the top of the ramp and then coming down. Because I think once he threw them at the top of the ramp, I mean, obviously we knew what was going to happen anyway, but it just, I think it would have added more if he would have played up being injured a little bit more.
No, I think it would have taken too long for him to hobble his way down. I think, this is where we disagree. I think it was done perfectly. I think it'll go down as one of the most memorable cash-ins just because the way the camera angle, you know, the shot of it, him throwing those crutches down, and then you knew, and Punk knew, and there was nothing he could do about it. And so I don't know. I just thought it was one of the better executed cash-ins, and I'm not a huge Seth Rollins fan, so, but I do like the way that they did it. And, you know, I said on Saturday night's main event, you know, I said at that time, I wasn't sure. I didn't think that he was really injured. And then other folks were kind of weighing in, then the videos with Becky Lynch. So, you know, people have talked about this Unreal. Have you watched any Unreal?
I have watched Unreal.
So I haven't seen it yet, but people have said,
it's,
you know,
Unreal.
It's what?
It's unreal.
I guess if it was Unelite, it would be a better program for you. But people have
reality television is not real. So, I'll just put it at that. That's what I'm. I mean, the show is fine. The show is fine. I'm just saying, if you're looking for total authenticity in it, no.
Yeah, well, you know, and the speculation is that this will. Some have said it's going to ruin, you know, pulling the curtain back too far, but others have said, you know, that it will help with future storylines and add the intrigue. I don't know. I haven't watched any of it yet, so I don't know. I've seen clips of it on YouTube and on TikTok, but I haven't done a deep dive with it. What do you think? Is it going to hurt or help the business?
I think if it was actually unreal, I think it would do some damage to the industry. I mean, again, we all know wrestling is written.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how much more you could really ruin the business, but to me, it just kind of showed, especially, and we'll get to this in a minute, the Cena heel turn kind of comes off as, hey, we want to do something, you know, to shock the crowd. Mm-hmm. And it's very Russo-ific where it's like, well, we have step A. Don't worry about anything that follows that to see how we're going to follow up on it.
So what did you think of then night two with we get, you know, Cody and John Cena? And some have said, and I don't disagree with it, but some have said that was John Cena's best match in several years, definitely on this comeback tour. What are your thoughts? We both speculated that he was not going to end the year. His career in December as a heel. We knew eventually the turn was going to come. Were you surprised it came so soon and the way it came about? Because it was kind of like, hey, our bad. I'm really a good guy still.
Oh, yeah. The face turn was total poor execution. And it seemed to be like, oh, wow, we don't have a way to end this. So good guy now, John Cena. Make a wish. The match itself, I think it's the match they should have had at WrestleMania.
Right.
And I think the somewhat inclusion of The Rock and Travis Scott in the WrestleMania storyline is what hindered that match. And the Cena heel, you know, I'm going to ruin wrestling, which I know, you know, when he turned face on SmackDown before SummerSlam, he didn't really explain why he wanted to ruin wrestling. He explained, like, you know, going into business with The Rock without mentioning The Rock and say, oh, you know, I was going to do this, but he didn't really explain why he wanted to ruin wrestling or how he was going to do that. I think from what news reports are, the Travis Scott relationship has completely died and we're not going to hopefully ever see him again. Who knows what's going on with The Rock. The Rock wants to bother to show up or not. So again, I don't think they had if you take those two out of the equation, there's no ending to the story, you know, because I'm just spitballing here. You know, you could have had Rock lose or Cena lose the title and The Rock beat him down and that turn, you know, would turn him face, or even though they would probably not do a Cena Rock match again, at least you have some impetus for his turn.
A lot of people speculated, and I was kind of waiting for Cody
to go
to flip and do a double turn. You know, and we'll get more into this too with the Hogan conversation, but we have seen traditionally, you know, although at the time Hogan Warrior back in 1990, it was the two top baby faces in the company. I thought it was one of Warrior's best matches. And I thought, you know, I thought for what it was good, but then you're left with, there was no big heel to kind of step in and challenge Warrior or Hogan for that matter. And again, we'll get more into that as we talk about Hogan and SummerSlam coming up in a few minutes, but with Cody and John Cena, I think, and I don't know why they decided not to go. I'm curious to know what happened with The Rock and to a lesser degree Travis Scott, because again, I didn't think his involvement helped anything. No. It hindered it more in my opinion, and I think in a lot of fans' opinions. But anyway, you know, could they have pulled off that SummerSlam match at WrestleMania, which is where you kind of want that showcase to be, although SummerSlam is allegedly the second biggest show of the year, or I guess it is the second biggest show of the year, but I don't know, man. I agree. I wish that WrestleMania would have ended that, and maybe they could have still had Cena win the championship and do this whole retirement tour as the babyface. Even though he was a heel, fans still were behind him. They were still cheering for him, because it's like, this is going to be, for a lot of those stops, that's the last time they're going to see him in a wrestling capacity. So I think we can all agree at the time, at the moment, you know, in February at Elimination Chamber, it was groundbreaking and something that we had, some fans wanted to see. I think in hindsight, you know, 6 months later, it was like a fart in church. It just did not, it didn't work. It was not a good.
Well, yeah. And we discussed it before when it happened, you know, I never believed Cena as a heel.
Right.
Yeah. I never felt like he was into it. I never, it just went against every, you know, with Hogan turning heel for the NWO, which seemed to go against everything that Hogan stood for, you know, say your prayers, eat your vitamins, take your needles, whatever. But with Hogan's, you know, well, let's talk about during his matches, he would do heelish things anyway. You know, he was never really a quote unquote true blood face that I think Cena is. So,
Well, I think also what helped with the Hogan turn was he had reached a point where he was, the fans were starting to turn on him anyway. So that helped. But then also, had they turned Cena 5 or 10 years ago, it might have worked. But also, you're adding in that it's Cena's last run, and we want to, you know, be nostalgic and celebrate that. But I also think what worked with Hogan was he changed his look, his personality. You know, he became Hollywood Hogan. And I know you can't do Hollywood Cena or what, or without it being a complete ripoff, but I think part of what hurt him is he never really changed that imagery. We still saw him in the brightly colored hats and shirts. And I think part of that was they started this retirement tour planning of, and I don't know that, I don't know at what point of the game they decided, let's turn him bad. But they had all these specially custom made things for each city that he's going to. I mean, it's hard to, you know, tell the fans to shove it and then have all this stuff for sale at the at the concession stand or the merch stand. So
it's a good point. And you know, I would expect the merchandising would have been started to be planned out late last year after he announced the retirement. And the heel turn at Elimination Chamber seemed, according to Unreal, just come up a couple of weeks before the show. So,
well, the other big thing out of SummerSlam was Brock Lesnar. I was stunned when his music hit and he came out. Like I said, I was still waiting for Cody and or The Rock to come back out or to come out and do something. I did like the fact that, you know, Cena did get that kind of moment to soak in the fans, and they were showing their, obviously, their appreciation, because I thought, we're not really celebrating the new champ. We're celebrating Cena, but I get it. I mean, it's part of that legacy, and we've seen that happen before. Kind of happened again. I'm going to use Warrior and Hogan as kind of the comparison there, because there's that shot of Hogan standing in the ring with his arm up in the air, or maybe Hogan is leaving the ring. I don't remember now, but it felt like Hogan kind of had a little bit of that spotlight post WrestleMania 6 match too. But anyway, what do you think of Brock? You know, I think the internet has, is like everything, divided on this. Even though he's not been arrested or on trial or
charged, or anything.
What's that?
Even charged with anything?
Yeah, even charged. You know, there's that section of the internet that has come unhinged over the fact that Brock Lesnar is back.
Yeah, well, in that section of the internet, I don't understand why they watch wrestling to begin with, because I mean, we've discussed at length here, and you know, the history of WWE is not without potholes. But you know, on the one hand, I think bringing Brock back will make for a good match with Cena, because they do have the history. And if this is Cena's retirement tour, kind of give him the old foes to face off against. But other than that, I don't care for Brock. You know, Brock 15 years ago was cool, you know, and was good to watch. Now he's just like, he's slipped into greatest hits boat. You know, it's like when you go see a band that's been out there for 20, 30 years and they just play the same songs over, you know, it's that's Brock Lesnar to me in a wrestling equivalency. So I think his match with Cena will be fine, but I don't know what you do with him. I mean, I guess a Brock Gunther match would probably sell tickets, but.
Yeah, I've never been a huge, you know, I'm with you on Brock and his, you know, and it has nothing to do with any of the allegations or anything. It's just, he's always just been one of those guys that I'm like, you know, he's a big, jacked up specimen and, you know, is that prototype, you know, what you would expect to see from a pro wrestler going in there and kicking ass. But I've never been like, he's not in my top, probably even my top 50, you know, he's just kind of one of those guys that's been there. So,
yeah, I mean, over the last 10 years, he has at least developed personality that he didn't have early on. But, you know, I think this is also an issue with WWE where they kind of are focusing on the older stars instead of cultivating that younger talent to take over. And so, you know, and what we saw when Hogan left, when Savage left, when Stone Cold and The Rock, like they've got the base there, but they haven't really established anybody to step up yet. So we'll see if they can get that, you know, taken care of in the next year, because with Cena gone, Orton's, you know, probably on his last few years. AJ Styles has said that he's probably out within the next year or so. Brock isn't going to be there long term.
Right.
You know, Roman shows up 3-4 times a year. So, but at least we can continue to yeet.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to love the yeet. So, before we get to Hogan and SummerSlam, one last thing kind of making the big news this week too is the new deal with ESPN. The way I understand it, and you probably know better than I do, it's going to be $30 a month for the ESPN app, for lack of a better word, to get. Is it just the PLEs, or are they moving everything from Peacock to ESPN?
My understanding is it is just PLEs for now. They are making. I believe it was a comment by Nick Khan who said that they are will now use the archives, and they mentioned something else, not NXT because that's with CW, but something else would do their own separate deals later. So who knows where, you know, in the rest of the world, all the archives are on Netflix, I believe. So you would think that they would go with one of their, and I mean, SmackDown is going to be on Peacock. I don't know how long that is. It a 5-year deal with USA for SmackDown. So,
okay, yeah, it's it. I get it. It's a business. They're obviously there to make money. TKO is there to make money.
Yeah. Here's my with money real quick, because ESPN, and I'm going to pull our curtain back a little bit and go unreal on this show. ESPN is owned by Disney. For the last 4 years, worked for Disney in some capacity. In the last 2 years, I have seen probably 50 to 60% of the people that I work with, including myself, laid off from Disney. And now Disney goes out and buys the NFL Network and a $1 billion deal at WWE. And I get it. It's money. It's business. It's what it is. But it's not. It's also one of those things where you're like, so you can pay billions of dollars and charge. And I think from what I've read, they don't even expect the ESPN app to be profitable. Okay. But you can do that and, you know, let all your staff go. So.
Yeah, that it sucks, because, and I know back in the day, I would have paid 40, 50 bucks for WrestleMania, or, you know, and I mentioned in my little quick little video rant that really the ones that I want to see live are Royal Rumble and WrestleMania, and everything else is just kind of, it's there, it's on my app, I'll watch it. You know, I watch SummerSlam live, but it wasn't like appointment television for me anymore at this stage. But when it's there and it's, and I'm not going to say free, but when it's there and I'm already paying, you know, $7.99 a month wasn't a bad deal for Peacock, which today I got the email. I know you got it a couple of weeks ago. They're raising the prices, and it's obviously to offset the mass exodus I'm expecting they're going to have from losing WWE stuff. Because I do think that, you know, I wish that these streaming companies would make it easier, because, like I said, I wouldn't mind paying $30 or $40 if I could just have it for that event. But now, you know, I don't. Am I going to watch Elimination Chamber, or is that worth $30? Because I'm not a sports person. I don't watch anything other than.
And that's the thing, too, with ESPN is, you know, I mean, you can, to my understanding, and again, you could, we could be wrong, or things could totally change by the time it actually takes effect. You can bundle ESPN with Hulu and Disney Plus, but I believe you still have to, if you do that, you still have to get the ESPN Plus subscription. Like, you don't, to get the PLEs. Yeah.
That's my understanding too. If that's not the case, though, then I would do that, because we do have, you know, and that's that was the thing about Peacock, is there's other programming there. You know, I could watch Saved by the Bell, or I could go back and watch old episodes of whatever, or, you know, some of their new stuff. I haven't watched a lot of their new stuff, but there were other things on Peacock besides wrestling that interested me. But with ESPN, it's just not.
Well, it's funny. Last week when I was out of town, and actually, I don't know if it was ESPN Ocho or ESN, which I think maybe is a different sports network, but late at night, they were showing Soap Hockey, which is basically a vinyl mat with, I guess, a little bit of water and soap, and then guys with hockey sticks and a rubber ball. And I'm like, that's what you're showing. That's how much sports there are to, we have to show. You know, the ESPN thing as well is, I don't know what my comment was going to be, but it's a thing where, if you're not into sports, are you going to buy it just for, you know, are fans going to buy it just for WWE? And I know, you know, a lot of the talk online is, oh, just get a VPN and you can get, you know, Netflix in another country and be able to watch at a cheaper rate. I mean, that is an option. I don't know how to do that with my Roku.
Right.
You know, but I'm sure there are ways, and I'm sure the internet can tell me how. But then it just this thing of, you know, we had the network, and then you moved everything to Peacock, and now you're moving things to, and then you moved to Netflix, and now you're moving to ESPN. And it's like, at what point will fans stop caring and stop wanting to follow you around? And I know, I think it was Nick Khan said, oh, we expect the fans to follow us, because I think their ego is a little bigger than it should be right now. But
well, and you know, to be fair to them though, the NFL, you know, Peacock, Paramount Plus,
Amazon,
are they on Amazon? So I mean, but I feel like it's absurd that they're charging $30 a month for that ESPN app.
Yeah,
if it were another $7, $8, $10, I might justify that. But man, $30 to me, and I know again, here's the clouds. I mean, that's just insane to pay monthly. And again, like I said, if I could do it to where in January or February, whenever they're going to do the Rumble, and then again for WrestleMania, I'd be fine with that. But
well, I mean, can't you subscribe just for the month? And
I guess
it would be like, I guess, buying, you know, back in the day when we would buy a pay-per-view. So yeah, I guess you could do that, but
I guess that may be what I end up doing.
Yeah. But, you know, I'll say this past week, I canceled Netflix, which will end at the end of the month. And I canceled my Sling subscription now that AEW goes up on Max the next day. So after this month, I won't have the ability to watch Raw or SmackDown. And I already can't watch NXT.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when ESPN launches, am I going to subscribe just to get the pay-per-view or the PLE? Probably not. There is a deal where if you, certain cable systems, if you have a subscription to ESPN, you will get them. And so I'm counting on that since my girlfriend has cable. Maybe I can, but then I have to talk her into watching WrestleMania and Royal Rumble. So maybe that'll be my option, but I just, like I said, I don't. And also, you know, coming off of SummerSlam and most of the events this year where I'm just like, it's not my, I am not in their fan base. I'm not who they're catering to. So maybe it's time for me, you know, it's like Marvel movies. There's comes a time where you just go like, okay, it's not my thing. I will find other sources of entertainment to entertain.
Well, let's go back to a time when it was our thing and we were in that fan base, in that wheelhouse. And that is 1988, the very first SummerSlam, which becomes really the fourth of the big four to be announced and become a thing. I know that the Royal Rumble was not a pay-per-view until January of 89, but in January of 88, we did get the free version on the USA Network. So I do, you know, it's WrestleMania, Survivor Series, Royal Rumble, and then of course SummerSlam. And obviously I think SummerSlam is probably the most mirrored to WrestleMania. There's not anything special or gimmicked about it. It's just a big extravaganza. You know, it came at a time when pay-per-view is in its infancy. Jim Crockett Promotions is still around and they're doing the Great American Bash and Starrcade and those kinds of events throughout the year. Do you remember SummerSlam 88? I know you had the big satellite dish. Did you watch that? I remember my buddy who had the big dish recorded because it was on a Monday night. We were freshmen. No. Yeah, that was our freshman year of high school. No, the start of our sophomore year of high school. He had recorded it, and I remember him bringing it to school, and then I went home and watched it. So what are your initial thoughts of SummerSlam? And obviously, it was built around the mega powers, Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage, that new alliance taking on the mega bucks of Ted DiBiase and Andre the Giant. And really, again, we've talked before, and we'll notice a theme with SummerSlam specifically and Hulk Hogan. There's always that shared spotlight in the main event, you know, WrestleMania, the first one, there's an exception there, but eventually we get the championship matches. But for the first couple of SummerSlams, it's Hogan and tag team competition and kind of sharing that spotlight with someone.
Yeah. For the first SummerSlam, by that time, the satellites needed a scrambler to get things. So I did not get to watch it live. I remember, I was visiting my cousins in Florida at the time and turned on the TV and I think it was the weekend Superstars or Challenge or whatever program. And then, you know, they went to the event center with Mean Gene and he's like, SummerSlam. And I'm like, what is SummerSlam? Like, excited. And that was like maybe 2-3 weeks before the show. So I was out of the loop thanks to no internet telling me that SummerSlam was coming up. Yeah, I remember, I'm trying to think, I don't even remember when I actually saw that SummerSlam for the first time. I just remember after it happened, somebody obviously that I knew had watched it. And the big thing was Miss Elizabeth.
Yeah.
And her distraction.
Yeah. Which allegedly, I've read that they were going to go more provocative than they did, which I think 10 years later in the Attitude Era, I mean, you know, that looked like, you know, much, much different controversy, I guess, if folks were really, truly concerned about that, which SummerSlam, though, is part of that match, that main event, was the continuation of the storyline, which I think many would argue is still one of the best stories in WWE or in wrestling history, and that is being the buildup and then the ultimate demise of the Mega Power. I can't remember, you know, obviously, I think it was Survivor Series then a few months later where Hogan helps Elizabeth up on Randy's shoulders. And that's where the touch of the rear end happens. But I don't know. I think that, you know, you look back on it and you wonder, did we need, you know, because now we have at least 12 pay-per-views a year, you know, one every month. AEW, I know, still does what, a handful a year. They're not
10. I mean, about 10. Yeah.
And it comes down to all this content. And we're talking earlier about, you know, it's on all these streaming platforms and all these cable channels and all that. And back in the day, we craved for that. We wanted more wrestling and now we've got it. Now it's like, okay, wait, maybe this is not what we asked for. But, you know, I think SummerSlam was a nice bridge in between WrestleMania and Survivor Series, and it kind of helped do that big blow off. What do you, with SummerSlam, where do you put it in your hierarchy of WWE PLEs or pay-per-views?
I would put it, with just counting the big four, I would go with number three, just because WrestleMania is the, you know, the granddaddy of them all, even though it's not Starrcade. And then Royal Rumble, just for the Rumble match itself being the attraction. And I've said Survivor Series. I know you and I have disagreed. I don't like the Survivor Series matches. I think they go on way too long and I lose interest. But so SummerSlam gets the de facto number three spot just by not being Survivor Series.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, that's where you and I disagree. You know, we typically agree on a lot of things on the show, but yeah, that's where I disagree with. I flip Survivor Series and SummerSlam, but you know, again, those early years, it's that influence of Hulk Hogan and Hulkamania and being important. A year later at SummerSlam 89, it's Brutus Beefcake gets the spot as Hogan's partner to take on Zeus and Randy Savage. I wonder if they went that direction because Zeus wouldn't be able to hold up in a singles match, because obviously Hogan's gone in 88 filming No Holds Barred. And that's why we see Savage kind of get the belt and not really get to break out and be the singles champion because they could have just as easily done a rematch between DiBiase and Savage for the main event or do Savage and Andre at SummerSlam. But I think also Andre was maybe not up for a singles match. I get why they did it. And again, we're advancing that storyline with the Mega Powers. Obviously, they explode. WrestleMania 5 happens. Hogan wins the belt back. And instead of defending, it's Hogan and Beefcake against Savage and Zeus. Again, that it's those early days of the celebrity influence. I don't know that Tiny Lister or Zeus was ever on my bingo card of being part of a wrestling show, but I get it. It was part of the promotion for the movie and you know, folks, I guess, wanted to see that. And if I remember correctly, though, Hogan hits Zeus with a loaded purse from Sherry. He intercepts it. And I can't remember. Does Hogan pin Zeus then? I don't remember. Or if Savage ended up eating the pin, I don't remember. But
I mean, I would suspect Savage took the pin, because then they built up to the no holds barred, the movie, the match.
Mm-hmm.
And you would think they would want to keep Zeus
strong
for that. So,
but you know, people today complain about like Jelly Roll or mm-hmm. Bad Bunny and the celebrities coming in and wrestling and being a part of it. This is obviously somewhat different, but really at the end of the day, it's kind of the same old, same old. It's been going on for, you know, almost 40 years well, 40 years with Mr. T factored in there, but
yeah.
Bringing in Zeus, you know, was obviously an ulterior motive to promote the movie. They could have just as easily done a Hogan Savage, you know, continued that feud mm-hmm. going on or found someone else for Hogan to battle at SummerSlam. But it just kind of becomes that tradition of these tag team matches for Hulk. And Hulk, by the way, is 6-0 at SummerSlam in 1990. We get the split main event. And this is the first time I remember them talking about a double main event for a wrestling event. It's Ultimate Warrior and Rick Rude in a cage, and it's Hulk Hogan and Earthquake. And Hogan wins by countout, which surprised me as well. He gets injured earlier in the year by Earthquake. I think he was off filming Suburban Commando at that time. And so he comes back, and luckily he didn't come back and feud with Christopher Lloyd, but
that would have been awesome.
But
well, there's a bounty hunter in that movie too that I'm surprised they didn't bring in to feud with Hogan.
Wonder whatever happened to that guy.
No, I don't know.
We'll have to do some research. But you know, again, we've had this conversation before too, because now it's commonplace, you know, especially now that there's two nights of WrestleMania, two nights of SummerSlam. Yeah. The word main event, you know, Hogan's match went on first or before the main event of the cage with Warrior and Rude. And I think part of that was only because of the fact that they had to assemble the cage and they didn't have what they have today where they can just lower it and raise it. You know, how important is it for the champion to go on last? Because obviously a couple of years later at WrestleMania, WrestleMania 8, it's Hogan and Sid in a non-championship match that closed out that show. Is the main event always the close of the show? Can there be more than one main event on a wrestling event, do you think?
Again, I think we get into semantics. I think by main event, for me, it's the last match, because that's your...
Right.
Event, but I think in terms of hype and expectations, many matches can be you know, I mean, you look at night one of SummerSlam this year, I'm sure to some people Roman Reigns and Jey Uso is a main event caliber tag team. So would that have been a main? Could they have promoted that as a co-main event? Probably. I mean, technically, yeah, they could promote anything. I mean, they could promote it. Becky Lynch versus Lyra Valkyrie as a main event, or Jelly Roll, who, again, you know, we talk celebrities now, and I don't know if it's just, you know, the same change that we've seen in wrestlers over the last 40 years. Are celebrities also just more athletic and whatnot? Because I mean, Jelly Roll was not, he was no AJ Styles in the ring, but he also wasn't the Great Khali, you know.
Mm-hmm, right.
He actually, and to get to Jelly's credit, you know, he's been down at the Performance Center training for the last few months and really wanted to put on the best match that he could.
Yeah.
Instead of just, you know, I think in the past we've had celebrities just come in and be like, okay, yeah, let me get my paycheck and publicity and get out of here.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, and bad again with Bad Bunny, Stephen Amell, all the celebrities lately have been. Anyway, I we were talking main events. I think main event, I think everything is promotion and publicity now. So main event interesting maybe means nothing.
Well, it's funny because, you know, I say funny and I mean it not in a ha-ha sense, and you'll understand when I say this, but, you know, after Hogan's death a few weeks ago, people were posting memes and said, you know, these are the only wrestlers still alive who main evented a WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. And it's Sergeant Slaughter, Bret Hart, and from the first 10 WrestleManias, I guess, or whatever the whatever number they threw in there mm-hmm. to go along with it. So it's Sergeant Slaughter, it's Bret Hart, and it's Ted DiBiase, which I argue Mr. T, and people were like, well, Mr. T's not a wrestler. And I'm like, mm-hmm. but he was in that instance. Anyway, that's not what I'm arguing. But then others were saying, well, what about Ric Flair? And people were like, well, Ric Flair didn't main event WrestleMania. And then the argument comes, well, he was the world champion and he defended at WrestleMania. So that's why I, you know, again, I tend to lean the way you do as far as it being the last match on the show. But then I also, those years that we did kind of see where, you know, Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker at WrestleMania 26 was the last match of the show. And I think there were two. I think it was Batista and Cena, and was it Bret Hart, or I'm sorry, CM Punk and Chris Jericho wrestling for the championships at those mm-hmm. at those manias as well. So, but then again, you hear the word main and you think, okay, this is the one and only, you know, main event can only be one match. But again, it's the semantics and yeah. probably talking yeah, about this way longer than I want.
I know. Just doing a quick Google search question. It comes up with the definition. Main event means the principal match, bout, or contest drawing the most attention and typically offering the largest reward. So okay. I guess it can mean whatever. But real quick, to take another segue, because I was going to mention this on the last episode where we talked about Hulk Hogan's passing. Who had Ric Flair being the last remaining major wrestler from our youth to be alive?
Yeah, that is. And he's the oldest.
Yeah.
You know, he was a few years older than Hogan and Savage and Warrior, obviously, and Piper. And it is, man, it is still to me. And I don't mean to sound like cliche or anything like that, but when I still see those posts pop up and it's got the, you know, 1954 to 2025 on Hulk Hogan's picture. I mean, it's like, it still feels kind of surreal. And it's like, wow, this is hard to believe. And then, you know, this past week was his memorial service. And I, as we continue to talk about SummerSlam, we'll talk about that now, I guess. I felt like WWE's tributes on Raw, SmackDown, NXT, and then at SummerSlam were all well done. I know his son, Nick, is not without controversy himself, but I liked that he was there in the red and yellow, you know, shirt and tie mm-hmm. with his wife and the fans showing their appreciation. And I think that's probably something that he needed in that moment to kind of feel that love, because obviously the last time, as we talked about when Hogan was on Netflix back in January on the debut of Raw, the reception was less than welcoming. And I think in mm-hmm. hindsight, you know, if people knew that was going to be the last time, maybe the reaction would have been different. I don't know.
Yeah. I think maybe if it had been somewhere besides LA, it could have been different too. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, going back to Brock Lesnar coming back, I mean, when he came out, when his music hit, the fans went, you know, crazy, nuts, excited. And we've talked about it before. It's when you're there in the arena, something like that is more meaningful to the experience mm-hmm. and the surprise. And instead of sitting there, like if you're sitting at home critiquing it, everything that's going on, you're just, you know, enjoying the moment. But I wonder how many wrestling fans actually know about the alleged, mm-hmm. you know, stuff with Brock.
Right. Yeah. That's a good
as point. Opposed to the online community that, wants to know everything. How many, and I mean, that's a whole nother discussion is how much the internet wrestling community actually, how big is it in terms of the wrestling fandom?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So. I agree. Well, continuing on with Hogan at SummerSlam, 1991 rolls around, and I personally, I think that of all the SummerSlam main events, this one in this era was probably the most played out and tiresome. The Iraq War really, or conflict in 91, Desert Storm, ended really before WrestleMania 7 even happened. And Sergeant Slaughter, of course, is the Iraqi sympathizer. Hogan wins the belt back, all to the fanfare of Real American. Obviously, it was a feel-good moment. I still think I would have gone, or would have rather seen them go in a different direction. Rude beats Warrior, and then Hogan gets the revenge at WrestleMania. I know there's not a story there, but they could have come up with something. Or turn one of them heel, Hogan or Warrior, and do that main event rematch, but with one of them as the heel. Could have easily turned either one of them, I think, probably Warrior, and then have Hogan win. But anyway, we get to SummerSlam, and it's Hogan and Warrior, which again, the ultimate team, if you will, these two, the two biggest names in the company, taking on Sergeant Slaughter, who is, no offense, past his prime at that point, the Iron Sheik, or Colonel Mustafa, as he was wrestling at, who was way past his prime at that point. And again, no disrespect. And then General Adnan, who was a manager for the most part. I know he wrestled in the 60s and 70s, but in the 80s and 90s, he was a manager. And so, again, you always throw that manager into the mix, and you're probably going to lose the match. But I just thought that that was kind of a piss poor SummerSlam main event. But again, the good guys win. Sid Justice is there, and that's kind of the introduction of Sid to the WWE universe at the time. Warrior rides off into the sunset for a while, doesn't come back until WrestleMania. But I don't know. I don't know what they were trying. I guess they're planting the seeds of Sid being there, and Flair's not officially there yet, but we've seen the big gold belt on TV, so we know Flair's on his way too. This is kind of the transition time, I think. Obviously, 90 was a big transition with Warrior being the champion, but 91, I feel like Hogan is kind of sun getting ready to sunset, and we don't see him again at SummerSlam after this until 2005. So I feel like we talk about these big names associated with wrestling, and Hogan obviously is still part of that, because it things really feel different moving forward when that next year, when the first year, it's the first WrestleMania without Hogan, felt less than, I'm sorry to say, the first rest or SummerSlam without Hogan. Yeah, they're at Wembley Stadium. It's a big crowd, but it's the Bulldog and Bret Hart. Okay. Savage and I'm sorry, Warrior and Savage again in another rematch, and they're both faces this time. It just, to me, it just didn't feel the same without Hogan being.
Yeah, and I think that would go, what I was saying earlier about having that next crop of stars be ready to take the spotlight. It's like Rocky V, when Rocky retires and then Tommy Machine Gun comes along and becomes champion, and people don't buy it because he never beat Rocky. That's just my little plug for Rocky V, which is still the best Rocky movie. But yeah, it's without Hogan. Because, this is almost 10 years in the, a span of time that Hogan has been the focus of WWE or WWF. And so when you take him out, it's kind of like when David Lee Roth leaves Van Halen after, 8 years. And then you got to bring someone new in, and they got to prove themselves to get that crowd over.
Well, and this is going to carry then into the 2000s, where, again, 91 is the last SummerSlam that we see Hulk Hogan at. He comes back and wrestles sporadically after that with the NWO, and then becoming Mr. America and doing all that stuff. But then we don't see him again at SummerSlam wrestling until 05, when he wrestles Randy Orton and wins. And then again, a year later, wrestles Shawn Michaels, who is, Shawn is, nearing the end of his, and he's got a couple years left or a few years left, but Hogan wins there too. And so obviously we just talked about the, building up those, that next generation, those new characters. And it almost would be equivalent of bringing Pedro Morales back at the first set of SummerSlams and having him beat someone like, the Ultimate Warrior or Randy Savage or you know, one of those upper tier, Mr. Perfect, someone that was kind of on the way up. And
yeah,
so I don't know that it was necessarily the best decision, but again, it's Hulk Hogan and you know, arguably the biggest name in the history. But then, you know, had he, and I think that Shawn Michaels match was his last, and I may be flipping him. I don't remember now if it's 05 when it's Shawn Michaels and 06 when it's Randy Orton or vice versa, but the internet will correct me or someone listening will correct me. But anyway, regardless, I think that's his last WWE match. It looks like you're searching it now. So
I'm not.
Oh, okay. But yeah, that's really kind of the end of him wrestling in WWE. And we never really got that big send off. I know he had a handful of matches in TNA. Should WWE, and maybe they didn't know at the time, should they have recognized that that was his last WWE match and done something? Could we have gotten another Hogan match, you know, when he came back? Mm-hmm. You know, kind of ping pong back and forth and went to TNA for a bit, and then he just kind of laid low and he's back in the company and doing more of that ambassador role stuff. You know, when these larger than life characters come back, do they need a last match to have that closure? We saw it kind of with Goldberg. We've seen it with Sting and Ric Flair and Kurt Angle, you know, some of the stars of recent years. Do they need the big match treatment or the last match treatment? Or is it just kind of like, okay, that was it? Because Hogan, as we said, biggest name, but not really a send-off as far as a wrestling match goes.
Mm-hmm. You know, I would say in today's environment, there's probably more of a chance of getting a send-off, because I think wrestlers, with the exception of Ric Flair, if they decide to retire, are going to retire. And part of it could be because they know they can no longer go medically. Mm-hmm. You know, Triple H just said, you know, he's got the heart issue. He can't get in the ring. Kurt Angle, same thing. Which I guess Triple H never really got a big send off, did he?
Right.
So I think if you're able to have that last match, like Sting, and know, okay, this is going to be it, then there's probably going to be a chance that you'll get a decent send off. But if you're just like, okay, I'm going into this match, and then I'm trying to think which wrestler said, you know, you never have a retirement match. Your matches just get further and further apart. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, like a Mick Foley, that kind of seems like his thing was like, I retired, but not really. I'm just going to have a match,
yeah,
you know, next year and 2 years. And so until finally that last match ends up being the last match and you don't realize it for several years.
Well, you know, we'll be able to hopefully find our favorites in their last matches, whether it's on ESPN or Peacock or YouTube or just, you know, having the
DVDs. HBO Max.
Yeah, HBO Max. But Chad, that's kind of my 1, 2, 3 cents, if you will, for the week. Anything else on your mind before we wrap up this week's episode?
No, I think I got everything I was going to, all the clouds yelled at that I was going to. And I got my comment about Ric Flair being the last one alive, which, man, I would have taken those Vegas odds.
Wow. Yeah, that would have paid off.
Yeah.
All right, friends. Well, we want to hear from you. What is on your mind? Let us know if future topic ideas or whatnot. We are going to try to continue to steer towards the nostalgia, but bring in and talk about some of the current stuff as well, because some weeks you just can't go without making a comment on the news, because it is a lot going on in the world of professional wrestling these days. So we appreciate you listening and or watching. We will see you next time.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.